I would say one of the better plays out there from kind of a mild MS perspective is check out AARP, check out some of the discounted gift cards you can get from there, and also from places like Newegg that occasionally will have them on sale. And you can at least start off your gambling with a couple of percentage off, so that it won't hurt so much when you start losing.
That's a great, great tip, by the way. I know that sometimes that can be problematic with some cruise lines, but it sounds like that's, I imagine as long as you don't overdo it, you're probably okay on that.
If you're doing a couple thousand, I don't think it's going to be a problem.
Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we talk of end of summer travel and a little bit of September. Tom, it's been a while since we've gotten together. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I think we've managed to go a couple of weeks without doing this. It's kind of missed this.
Well, it's just been so much travel. In fact, here we are recording this after you've done not one, but two different trips. And so let's jump right into it. Little Labor Day or end of summer trip for you. You did a daring thing, if you ask me, in the fact that I think you took a Carnival cruise.
Yes.
You cheated on Royal Caribbean.
I did. Well, this whole year has been a bit of cheating on Royal Caribbean. We've tried Princess, we've tried Virgin Voyages, and probably the biggest betrayal so far, Carnival.
And I think you're doing it in the wrong order, if I might offer. I mean, we're talking Princess, that's kind of a luxury cruise line. I think we established a couple of episodes ago that Virgin Voyages is a pretty premium era cruise line, I should
it
say.
It is, it is.
And then we have Carnival.
Yeah. Let's just say I booked this a long time ago and it made sense at the time. It was part of the Carnival Fun match, so I matched over my Caesar's Diamond, that has been written ad nauseum in the blogosphere. And, if you have the opportunity, I would definitely recommend you do that.
Oh, but I already did.
And, that's what you did. I'm two years behind you, right? Didn't you do that in 2021 or something? Or 2022?
Yeah, I think that was 2022. Yeah, we did a 10-day with Dia and a handful of others, and we got a lot of wonderful memories as souvenirs, as well as COVID. I think for all three of us on that one.
Well, there's some eerie similarities, unfortunately. We'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, so I did the fun match, and I tried to find something that would be advantageous from a leave from work perspective. So of course, I picked Labor Day week, so I had at least one free holiday day in that trip, so make a little bit less of a dent on my PTO balance. That was kind of the main motivation, but also I actually was looking forward to trying Carnival out. I think Carnival gets kind of a bad rap for the most part. I think there's some things that are probably deserved. I'm going to go to that in a moment, and there's some other areas where they probably are better than what people expect. So should I go into it? Should I talk to you a little bit about my trip?
Well, yeah, but let's start off with the itinerary you did. So you did it over a week. Where do you sail out of, and what were your ports?
Out of Port Canaveral, 8-day cruise. Ports included Amber Cove, which is in the Dominican Republic. We stopped in St. Thomas. We stopped in San Juan. We stopped in, I'm trying to remember one other. I think, oh no, those might have been the actual ports. I'm trying to think if there's any other ones. Oh no, there was one other. Sorry, Turks and Caicos. That was the other one. So a pretty fun cruise. A couple of places hadn't been to Amber Cove.
Is that like a Carnival cruise port?
It kind of is. What's interesting is, they had a very nice pool area. It was open to all the people on the ship. It wasn't like you didn't have to pay extra. Just you had to pay extra for, drinks and other things like that. So a nice pool, not super large. It wasn't anything quite as large as what you'd find maybe on Coco Cay or something. But still, you could take a quick little 10-minute circumnavigate this round pool. And it was nice. It was nice to cool off a little bit. Weather didn't cooperate exactly well, at least the day we were there, because it was kind of overcast. But in some ways, that's nice too, because you don't overheat and you don't feel bad about getting sunburned.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that. Sun is nice, but by the end of August, you've probably seen all the sun you want to see.
I got enough color, I think, this summer.
Okay, so it sounds like some new ports a call for you. How do we want to start? Just your embarkation experience?
Yeah, I mean, embarkation experience, pretty normal. I don't know that there's anything particularly to report. It was pretty smooth. Just seems to be, I wouldn't say it's quite as smooth as maybe I've seen on Royal Caribbean, where they seem to really have, especially with the really big ships, I think they have all their processes figured out. what was interesting is we stayed at a Holiday Inn Express that was literally right across the street from Port Canaveral. So one of the things that I would recommend is if you can find that hotel on points and you happen to be leaving from Carnival's terminal at Port Canaveral, that might be a really nice place to overnight, just because literally don't need an Uber, just walk across the street and you can just kind of get on the ship.
And the added value is that you're immediately a Carnival expert because you stayed at a Holiday Inn Express.
That's right. I may not know everything, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express.
So remind us again, the Carnival ship name?
Yeah, so this was the Carnival, this was Carnival Mardi Gras. It's an XL class ship. It's one of their newest ships. So I think it kind of joins, I think, the Jubilee and I think maybe the Celebration are some of these larger ships that Carnival's added to their fleet. And she's very nice. You know, I thought the cabins were good. I think the public facilities were good. Surprisingly, a lot of the dining was actually very nice too. I wasn't sure what to expect, but there's some interesting things there. I would definitely, if I were doing my fun match again, I would definitely recommend that you pick one of these newer ships because I think that's going to give you your best foot forward for Carnival. Nothing against the older ships. You know, I mean, I think there's actually probably some advantages of those as well. They're definitely going to feel less crowded. I will say the Mardi Gras did suffer from feeling the crowds. I think the design of the ship is such that there are a lot of pinch points where a lot of people are being funneled through the same areas. I think, again, this is another area where I think Royal Caribbean does a good job of trying to identify those points and try to make alternate paths so that you don't have all 6,000 people on the ship kind of collecting in the same areas. I don't know that Carnival's got that down to a science. I think they're much more likely to have people in your way, in the hallway, or, you know, the way that they have the elevators and the various public spaces. I think your space management is not quite as elegant. But, you know, on the flip side, it is an excellent ship. I think most people would have a hard time. They have plenty of pools, some nice lounging areas. The adults area in particular, the Serenity area, I think is what it's called. That was quite nice to hang out in. I enjoyed quite a few of the aft pools as well. Those were fun to swim in as well.
Interesting. And before we get too far away from the ship, if I recall correctly, the Mardi Gras was one of the first ships that Carnival had when they started as a cruise line.
That's right. This is actually the second ship to have the Mardi Gras.
Yeah. Maybe. So it's got a storied past.
It does. It does. Including the motto, I think, let the good times roll. So.
Well, and I'm going to have to remember that motto when you get into some of your stories from this cruise. So I think we covered some of the dining experience. Did you do any specialty dining or just the main dining room the whole time?
No. We did one specialty dining, and that actually was a highlight to become. I mean, if you want to talk a little bit of the dining real quick.
Yeah, let's do that.
Actually, I come to think of it, we had several specialty dining meals. So we did have the majority of our dinners in the main dining room, but we had one dinner at, I think it's Cantina del Capitano or the Italian restaurant, which is included in your cruise fare. So you can have one visit there. If you want to visit a second time, there's an extra charge on Mardi Gras. I think there's some different situations on some of the newer ships, like on Jubilee during its inaugural season. I think you might be able to have extra visits. Also went to Chabang, which is kind of this weird Asian Mexican restaurant. Not sure that combination works. But, you know, we had a pretty good meal there. Actually, again, I was on this cruise with some of my friends, my good friends, Dion and Eileen, and they've been my cruise partners on many a cruise. And they have cruised Carnival previously, a couple times, actually, and they had actually had less successful trips to these specialty restaurants. But I thought they were fine. I didn't think they were negative. I wouldn't necessarily say the Italian restaurant. I mean, I've heard people say, oh, the Italian food on Carnival is very good because, you know, the captain and the crew tend to be of Italian background. I don't know if I would necessarily say that because I think our Italian dinner was decent, but nothing special. I wouldn't say it's any better than, you know, the specialty restaurants on Royal. And similarly, again, I think the Asian Mexican restaurant, I had low expectations based on some previous experiences and they were exceeded. So I think we had actually a pretty good meal there.
I'm just still trying to wrap my head around Asian Mexican. I mean, is that?
I guess they ran out of space and they were like, we need a Mexican restaurant and maybe an Asian restaurant. I'm like, well, let's just squeeze them together.
So how were the taquita gyoza?
Yeah, no, they didn't have, you know, the funny thing, they just have Mexican dishes and they have Asian dishes for the most part and you can just mix them.
Oh, there's no fusion of the two.
Yeah, there's less fusion than you would think. You'd think the idea behind it would be to fuse some stuff, but that's not so much what they did. I would say the most successful trip we had was to Rudy's, which is a seafood restaurant. We didn't try the steakhouse there, but we did try Rudy's. And that actually was a relatively upscale fine dining experience. We had lobster. I had cioppino, which is a beautiful Italian stew of different seafood. Our entrees were good. I think I had a surf and turf, which was excellent. The venue itself is very, very elegant and nice. Yeah, you kind of forget you're on a carnival ship when you're dining there.
You know, the Notre Dame fan in me really just wants to go, Rudy, Rudy, Rudy.
With an I, by the way, not with a Y, but anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, that kills it. Seafood. Okay. No, that sounds fun. So you did this match. Did you have a balcony cabin?
I was entitled to a balcony cabin, but they didn't have any available when I booked. So I just had an interior cabin.
Oh, wow. Okay. Still cabin fine compared to, you know, the other ones that you've been in and yeah. On other ships.
Yeah, the cabin was well laid out. Not really too many complaints, except the fridge was too good. I had a bunch of Diet Pepsis in there and one of the cans exploded, which, you don't usually talk about the fridge being too cold on a ship, but that was the situation here.
I can commiserate. That's the experience we have at our home, in fact. but I've never had that on a ship, let alone any hotel or anything. So, well, I mean, we both like our ice cold beverages. So
I do like them ice cold, but don't like the cans to explode. Not quite that cold.
Yeah, you don't like them icy.
No, ice would be preferable. Yeah, so the cabins, they were fine. Housekeeping was fine. Bathroom a little bit smaller than what I'm used to on Royal Caribbean, but still serviceable. I was solo in that cabin, so I had plenty of space. Only downside is I don't think there was any like kind of couch or chair kind of to, there's kind of like a stool that was a storage ottoman or something to sit on. So seating was not great. That would probably be my biggest complaint.
Not a place you're going to hang out with other than to sleep or just rest. Yeah.
Yes, okay. That is true.
So I know that you love your casinos. You might be an aficionado of floating casinos.
Well, let me get to that in a minute. I do want to talk just briefly about the main dining room. Also, just to round out the food. Because, you know, I mean, food is kind of important. I mean, you know, people go to cruises to eat, you know, and enjoy, especially not cooking, and especially for 8 days or whatever. And it actually kind of spoils you having to come back home and have to think about these things a little bit more strongly. But, you know, the main dining room, no white linens. I kind of miss that. You know, they don't have quite the pomp and circumstance of let's say Royal Caribbean or some of the other cruise lines where the white tablecloths come out. It's funny, on formal nights, you know what they do bring out? They bring out this like silver seashell. They put it in the middle as a table decoration. That's their that's their zhuzhing it up a little bit, you know, for formal night.
And they still do the dancing with the special uniforms.
Yes, you know, so I was kind of told like, maybe they do it every night, but no, on this cruise line or this sailing in particular, they did do the showtime, the dancing or whatever, but they didn't do it every night. They did it toward, you know, maybe some of the special nights where when they're, you know, like the farewell dinner or, you know, one of the formal nights.
Yeah, I think when we did the Pride, they only did it like two or three nights, but I don't know. I just find that so distracting from the dining experience.
It's nice to do it once or twice. Every night would be a little bit too much. Dining room food was actually pretty good, actually. I was surprised. I would dare say even slightly better than Royal Caribbean, which did surprise me. So I think main dining room, very, very decent food. I can't speak for every ship, but Mardi Gras did a good job with the meat quality. Like I had like some steak or some prime rib or whatever came out. And I'd say the quality of the meat was, dare I say, slightly better than what I got on Royal Caribbean. The other big thing that I wanted to just mention is Carnival has really great casual dining. They have Shaq's Chicken. They have Guy's Burger. They have all of these kind of casual eateries that have tasty food that's available, not all the time, but, you know, different times of day. And I think it's good. It does help with a big deficiency, I think, is their buffet. Buffet is actually pretty bad. I think the selection is very poor. They don't have a lot of items. And the food items themselves were okay, but it's, you know, your selection is not what I'm used to. I'm used to much better options. You know, when you go to a buffet, they only have like maybe like, you know, two or three entree choices and a couple of sides and very much less than what you'd expect going on a cruise ship of that size to feed the number of people they're trying to feed with different tastes and such. So that is a little bit of a disappointment, but otherwise casual food, they got it figured out. I mean, they've got lots of different options. Pizza, you know, paninis, burgers, chicken fingers, you know, they've got, and they're all reasonably good quality.
And casual food's important. Before we leave food, though, what was the lobster situation in the main dining room?
They did have it on formal night. They had lobster on the formal night, which was nice. Again, not same like some of the other cuisines. It wasn't unlimited. You couldn't keep asking for more. But it was nice to have it, you know, and it was an 8-night cruise. So I think it seems to be the standard for most cruise lines that if you have like a 7-night, a week-long cruiser or longer, there'll probably be at least one night where they're serving some kind of lobster tail or something. Just to recognize that, hey, let's have a slightly elevated night of dining.
Well, and I think that makes sense. So, you know, glad to hear the lobster is perhaps limited, but alive and well on Carnival. So shall we jump to the floating gambling?
Yeah. Well, so I think with this being Labor Day, and what I found out later was this was an elite cruise. So Carnival does certain cruises where they're targeting some of their higher level gamblers. And I didn't pick this one because it was an elite cruise. I actually probably would have probably in retrospect picked a different cruise because man was the casino busy. Man was it was just popping. I don't know if it was because it was Labor Day weekend, the kind of week cruise, or because of the elite status, but it was so busy. And I would say to my detriment, because I think the games that I wanted to play, I didn't always have what I wanted to have played. And honestly, I could not win. I got one good session of craps in, and the rest of the time I was just giving money to the casino. And I think I stopped gambling after about day three, or maybe it was day four of this cruise. Halfway through the cruise, I just stopped putting money in that casino because it was just going in one direction.
Oh, that's a little bit of a shame. But sometimes you do have to realize that you've got a limit. And if Lady Luck is not sailing on your side, then you just have to wait for the next time you ship out.
Yep. I would say the casino was very large. I guess so for those who do like to gamble, it's quite nice. Downside is that the smoking section was very smoky. People were human chimneys over there. And that would probably be one negative. One positive is, you know, and I think we've mentioned this before, Carnival Corporation and their various brands, they do make it easy to bring to, you know, to redeem gift cards and use that toward your gambling as onboard credit. So I would say one of the better plays out there from kind of a mild MS perspective is check out AARP, check out some of the discounted gift cards you can get from there and also from places like Newegg that occasionally will have them on sale. And you can at least start off your gambling with a couple of percentage off so that, you know, it won't hurt so much when you start losing.
That's a great, great tip, by the way. I know that sometimes that can be problematic with some cruise lines, but it sounds like that's, I imagine as long as you don't overdo it, you're probably okay on that.
If you're doing a couple thousand, I don't think it's going to be a problem. I would say, obviously, don't just like load up a whole bunch of gift cards, charge a whole bunch of chips to your room, and then just cash them out immediately. That doesn't look good either.
Oh, of course not. Did you do any of the load from your room account type MS as well? Or
I actually brought quite a few gift cards, a couple $1,000 worth. So that I did a few $100 from my room to my credit card. But at that point, I was like, you know what? I don't need to do it anymore.
Okay. Well, at least you're validating data points for, yes, you know, what works, what doesn't work sort of thing.
And you can do it all at the kiosk. You don't have to. I mean, I know in Princess, my experience was you have to go to guest services, which can be hit or miss depending on, you know, how long the line is and how efficient the agent is. On Carnival, the other advantage is they do have these, you know, they have their version of Kate, you know, where you can just go to the kiosk and load up your gift cards and have it be a very, very frictionless process.
Oh, talk about a blast from the past. And for those listeners that might not know what we're talking about, Kate was essentially the machine in Walmart where you'd be able to load your Amex Bluebird, you know, whether you were loading them with like Visa gift cards, that sort of thing. And so you could do it just on the machine without having to actually talk to a person at the money center.
Thank you for that. I should say thank myself for that blast from the past and going down memory lane there. I do want to say two interesting, significant things about Carnival before we kind of move on to the next topic. But I would say Carnival, you know, I think it gets a bad rap because I think people generally have this negative opinion of Carnival that it's, you know, kind of a little bit more Walmart-y or, you know, and some of that's probably deserved. I'll be honest. There were some fights online on the cruise. Security had to get involved and break up some adults behaving badly. And more importantly, this was the only cruise I've ever been on where I've been woken up at 1:30 in the morning and with a abandoned ship alarm. So I've never actually had to go to my muster station outside of embarkation day. So this was quite significant. We did actually have a false alarm go off in the middle of the night. People were quite distressed, as I was, because number one, other than the alarm, the automated alarm, there was really no guidance, and so most of us went to our muster stations and found out a little later that it turned out that this was a false alarm, and they really didn't provide much explanation behind that or any kind of service recovery beyond that. If this stuff happens, I guess this stuff happens on Carnival.
The frequency is kind of weird. I've been on probably 4 or 5 cruises, and it was a Carnival cruise. Well, 4 or 5 Carnival cruises in the long period of time that I've been cruising. And it was a Carnival cruise that lost power in the middle of the North Atlantic. You go on one Carnival cruise, and you're like getting sent to your muster station out of a dead sleep.
Let's just say Carnival cruises are definitely eventful cruises. You know, you're not going to go. They're going to be memorable, sometimes for the wrong reason.
The entertainment is not just in the theater.
Yeah, yeah.
Carnival.
And their entertainment was, again, not as good as Royal Caribbean. They did have a bunch of production shows. It's actually, I feel bad for the entertainment stuff. I was amazed by how many shows the singers and dancers were kind of the leads in. You know, you'd see them in one show, then you see them the next night in another show, then you see them in another show. And I'm like, how many songs and like moves and stuff do these people have to learn? I mean, it's crazy. So the other bad thing was I did get sick on this cruise.
I was going to ask you about that. We had an over-under joke, I think, leading up to your cruise of whether you were going to get COVID or something else that was going to sideline you for a little bit. And I think I won.
That is not ever correct.
The thing you want to win.
I'm sorry to say you were right. Although in Carnival's defense, my friend Eileen was sick at the beginning of the cruise, and I think she managed to infect me. I don't know that for 100% certainty, but the last 2 days of the cruise, I was pretty much bedridden. I was feeling miserable. That did put a little bit of a damper on the cruise. So for me, it was more of a 6-day cruise than an 8-night cruise.
And you got to board with patient zero.
I did. I also think, they're just not as good about some of the protocols. I mean, Royal Caribbean, if you go to their dining, especially the buffet where, people are touching similar utensils, they funnel everybody through one central entrance and everybody, staff are there to make sure you wash your hands. There's no such thing that happens on Carnival. And in fact, the wash stations are somewhat hidden. They're kind of off to the side and for some people, it'll be an afterthought. So again, some negative things. So there's some things about Carnival's reputation that are probably deserved, based on some of these experiences. I will say that Carnival, from a cruise line standpoint, the one advantage for some people, I think, will be it definitely does not, it's not very judgmental. I feel like all these other premium cruises, you're going to have people judging you all the time. And Carnival is just, it's a free, happy, it's a fun ship, right? So people aren't going to have huge, they're not about putting on airs or anything like that. It's just, everyone's having fun. Everyone do your thing. And in some cases, it's very freeing. It's very nice. I definitely didn't feel like there were, people judging me like, why is this person here? I didn't feel that way. I did feel that way on a Princess cruise. And I might have even felt that on a Virgin cruise. But the demographic of the people there are very free and loose. And that comes with some good things and some bad things.
Let the good times roll.
That's right.
So continuing that rolling on, I think we've probably beaten this one to a rolling sea.
Yes.
So probably just jumping to topic number 2 that we had on track for today. I think I'm quitting Cap Cana in the Dominican Republic.
Wow. You had been quite the fanboy of Cap Cana.
I had. So this was our 3rd trip there, 2nd this year. We enjoyed ourselves so much in January that we actually extended our stay.
Is it too much of a good thing or did something happen?
I don't think it was too much of a good thing. I don't know. I felt like the experience just was a lot less enjoyable this time. I felt like the service, the soft product, right? So to speak, the service delivery felt like it failed so frequently. And I just don't understand why. Like, we stayed at the Hyatt Ziva Kepkana. We covered that on a previous episode. I probably need to dig that up to include in the show notes. And the club pool, as globalists, we get access to the club pool, club restaurant, club bar, you know, which is nice. You get a little higher shelf alcohol. You know, they've got all the different tequilas. Not that I have a whole lot of that. Example, they have like Di Serrano Amaretto versus regular Amaretto in the other bars for, you know, just kind of just a little bit of an example. Room was nice. Room actually was far superior to the one we had last time because we were in that main building. So nice, easy, short walk, beautiful view looking right out at the, I don't know if that's the Caribbean Sea or what. So, you know, room was great. Where they really, really felt short, the butler was not as good. He was not as, you know,
not as polished.
Yeah, not as polished. That's a great way to say it. And the restaurants, some of the seating looked like it was changed out with, like, you know, the type of chairs that you'd get if you went to a conference.
Oh.
The not very nice kind of just, you know, very, very run-of-the-mill type type chair. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if you looked at a restaurant, we always ate early because of our daughter. And you look at the restaurant and you've got, like, half the restaurant's got, like, type-made chairs specifically for the atmosphere, I'll say, you know, for the genre of the restaurant. And then the rest of the restaurant are just like, hey, we pulled these from the conference room because we somehow needed to add more.
Could it be a capacity thing? I mean, but, you know, of course, we both chose Labor Day vacations this year. Was there just more guests?
They weren't actually that busy, but they definitely, they've added an extra seating to all their restaurants. They used to open at 6:00. They open at 5:30, but they had been doing that even in January. But in some cases, yes, they definitely added capacity. There were so many of us that were crammed around this teppanyaki table that the chef didn't know who was getting what, and so it made it a little confusing. And then as we're going through, he's putting the rice down, and there's not a plate for my daughter. Like, you know, person next to us, like, we're doing the math a little bit late. And what happened was is there was somebody that had, like, a lap infant, and they took a full plate for that, lap infant. I mean, you know what? It's an all-inclusive, big deal. But the chef then had to make special rice over for my daughter, which was not very cool. It just was one thing that changed the experience, right? Yeah, the waiters at every restaurant on the Ziva side, and we tried them all, would forget our orders or mess up our orders.
Wow.
They would forget drinks. In some cases, they forgot entrees. It was very, like, it was about as unpolished as you could get.
I can't help but, you know, think about, you know, our conversation with Richard Kerr on the last episode, where he's talking about, like, Aman, and then you're talking about your soft product at what should be a relatively premium resort, right? Because, you know, it's not like Capcana was, you know, it's always, I felt like they were really striving for kind of an elevated experience. It sounds like, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a staffing thing or whatever, but that soft product, like you said, kind of disappointed.
Yeah. And I remember them being so much better when we were there in January. And I was talking to the staff, and the staff were like, yeah, we got some people coming in over the weekend, but it's not a lot. Like, this is not our busy time because it's just so hot. And it's also the hurricane season. There was a day we were down by the pool, and my daughter loves ice cream, and she was not feeling the greatest. Like, she was just, there was just something a little bit off. And so she really wanted some ice cream. And they have this nice little area over by the coffee that has ice cream. But nobody could tell me what time it opened. I walked over to the Zalara side and I asked them. Nobody could tell me what time this ice cream opened. One guy says 12. Okay, so I go back at 12. Nothing. Maybe 12:30. I'm like, you literally don't know what time you're going to put ice cream out? How do you miss that? Like, I don't mean to be too critical here, but I mean, that's a kind of basic thing. Hey, we like to put the ice cream out between 2 and 10. Okay, fine. If it's not till 2, that's fine. Just tell me when. We did do a couple of nights of babysitting, and we were able to get over to the Zalara side. The only saving grace of this trip, I think, was the Zalara side. They've got 3 primary restaurants. They've got a steak restaurant. They've got a Indian restaurant, which we have not tried. And they've got a Tahitian sort of fusion French restaurant. And then they have this amazing Black Eyed Cat bar, which does craft cocktails and was just absolutely phenomenal. I threw some stuff up on Instagram about those because they were just so you know, the drinks were just so nice. And I'm not usually like big on these craft cocktails. I mean, I know if you can wait long enough to get into the Centurion Lounge and then to the bar, they'll do a craft cocktail. Same thing with Chase Sapphire Lounge and stuff. But that's not like always my vibe. We changed things up and we were really excited to try those. And they had a lot of Bond themed things, like some smoked, some with the little smoke ball that kind of goes on the top. So those things were cool. The steak restaurant, they took away the filet mignon. And so like,
how do you take away the filet mignon from a steak restaurant?
Well, they had ribeye, they had tenderloin, but they didn't have like a real filet mignon type cut.
Well, tenderloin is filet mignon.
Okay. Okay. Well, I remember a much better cut last time, I'll say.
Okay. Maybe they're just getting like the not well formed tenderloin or whatever.
Well, and here's the funny part. We go to Brando's, which is the French Tahitian restaurant. The hands down best meal we had the entire time. And they gave me a steak that was twice, maybe even 2.5 times the size of the steak I got at the steak restaurant.
You know, it's funny how that is sometimes with these like all-inclusive cruises. You know, you go to a restaurant that's not known for whatever to be a steakhouse or whatever, and you end up with a better steak than you did from the steakhouse itself. And you know, it's funny that seems to be with a lot of these kind of all-inclusive type places, that doesn't actually surprise me that much.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I was starting to question everything, and then we go to Brando's, and I mean, this one restaurant out of all the others, the service was completely refined.
There were some highlights. There were some gems. In this trip.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Brando's was our second to last night. And so, you know, by that point, we were sort of like, this is probably not going to be an encore type experience, but maybe time will soften that. But I mean, Brando's, for example, the wait staff was so refined. They came, they serve water. Everybody serves water, right? Out of, bottled water. This one comes back with lemon and lime wedges and offers that. Every other restaurant, either side, nobody offered that. Just Brando's.
Yeah.
You know, those small little things that leave a kind of a nice taste in your mouth.
I wonder if your what's kind of driving some of your decision making around this is you had two successful trips there, right? Previously, right?
Oh,
so
we probably had
a standard.
We had expectations.
You had expectations and a standard that were based on kind of that previous, you know, experience. And on top of that, I think you probably were thinking, you know, it's not like the price or whether it be points or dollars of this resort has been going down. It's been quite the opposite, right?
Oh, and it's so, quite the opposite. Double, yes. Essentially.
So it's, you know, in my mind, I could see just even subconsciously you thinking, you know, hey, this should be even better, or it should at least meet the same level of standard. And so I just see that whenever you see, you know, a deficiency, it's just that much more painful.
Yeah. I could totally see that. The other side I'd say is that, again, the club pool and all their staff were just simply fantastic. They would go get our lunch for us. We'd be able to order through them. They'd bring our lunch right to the. So during the day, the main part, you know, the main event.
The resort itself was good.
Yeah. It was just you're an all inclusive and you highlight dining and you fall short on almost every aspect of dining. And then just to close that out, because I don't want to belabor the point. I mean, I still think folks will get value out of going. I just think it's really expensive for the level of service delivery that they've got now.
I mean, it's just interesting. I haven't been to Cap Cana, right? But I've been with you, you know, to... Wait, have we gone together to a Zeebo or a Zilara? I'm trying to remember now.
I've been somewhere you've been to.
But I don't think we've been.
We haven't gone together, no. We usually go to, like, you know, far-flung places like Vientiane, Lao.
That's true. We usually pick a transoceanic flight. And most of these Zeebo Zilaras are less than transoceanic to get to.
They don't even count, really. I say that. They don't even count as international. Yes, you are a passport. But like, it's not a time zone change. It's not 8-hour lay flat flight. I mean, you know.
Apparently there's a new country union over here. You know, it's like you have to be within the same time. It's not even leaving the country. It's the same country. But I will say this, you know, as most of the listeners know now, I mean, I'm a cruise aficionado. So, and a cruise vacation is an all-inclusive vacation. And,
it is. Oh, yeah.
And I will say that, you know, I think it gets harder and harder for me to justify the land-based all-inclusive because just stories like this. And I just think the economics is such that it's a lot harder, I think, for the land-based all-inclusives to deliver, especially given that, you know, they're at such a high cost.
Yeah, I could see that. But the reason that I like the all-inclusives, I mean, I'm not going for the restaurants. Yes, I'm criticizing them heavily for the restaurants. But the big pool that I can have some personal space at and just be able to sit, and having that personal space, I never see, like, I'm never somebody that's on a cruise ship laying out there by the pool. My family does. It's just too tight. It's too tight.
Yeah. It's especially on a sea day. Now, some of the port days, you could do that.
Yeah, but the pools still aren't even that.
They're not very large. Exciting.
Yeah.
It's not the same experience. That being said, you know, the private island experience is pretty close. You know, I mean, I think.
We've loved that. That's the highlight of our cruise.
It really is. Yeah, but you're right. You know, I think you do offset that. And if you're a lounge by the pool kind of person and you want to do that for a couple of days straight, yeah, cruise vacation may or may not work for you, depending on the port schedule. So.
Yeah, so just to close this out, because we want to get to our third topic, traveling out of Punta Cana is not a very fun experience. They have very rigorous security, and so here you are, you're traveling in flip-flops, as I do at least, because you're at a beach vacation, and you even have to take your flip-flops off. I mean, you've got to literally, you know, this is like the security from right after 9/11 caliber security.
To enter the hotel?
No, to enter the airport.
To enter the airport. Okay, got it.
And then add to that, that if you are willing to pay $30 or $40, the grift side of things is such a way that, like, you know, multiple people would cut me in line because they were escorted by somebody. And all the security people understood that. Those individuals, hey, you got to watch out. Come on right through. I mean, it was just one of those things where this was theater plus looking for a handout. And it was just, it was not as bad as like Cairo. But
yeah,
you know, in our hemisphere, I don't think
there's any places as worth as Cairo for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And then the lounge experience, everybody makes a big deal about how the lounge in the new terminal has a pool. I never see anybody in the pool, number one. And number two, like yes, you've got lounge access. It is as basic as basic gets. I mean, a United Club would be more comfortable than this lounge. The Priority Pass lounge they had. Now, I know I shouldn't, that's a first class problem, but
this is pretty common for the Caribbean.
And that's fair. It just, you want to try to have this nice all inclusive vacation and everything, and you go down this path and you've had a nice vacation at a resort, and it's just so grueling getting home that you're sort of like, well, why didn't I just go to Thailand? It would have been, I probably would have come back more relaxed. At least that's the way I was thinking.
Yeah, it's hard to go on vacation and then just have it just be so frictionless on your way home. You know, it's like you do your best in planning to make that happen. But I think the reality is you're always going to have some grating experience trying to get from your resort back to your home.
I feel like you can do it better when you have long hauls and you avoid London.
Well, at least you can come off the plane rested, you know?
Yeah,
which makes it a lot easier to work through the various travails of travel.
Yes. This last topic, you didn't have any travel travails. And let's not bury the lead. What did you do at the end of September?
I went to one of the Chicago seminars, the one that was at the Hyatt Regency at the end of September, which I really enjoyed. I met so many people, including people, some that I hadn't seen in years. And it's almost like a reunion, you know, post-pandemic. It's like this was my really first time to see a lot of these people. A lot of faces that I've seen at other meetups this year, and as well as just new people. And it was a great experience, I think, for such a large conference. Because, you know, I generally would have negative things to say about such a big conference. There was over, I think, 517 people there, which is huge. We barely fit into the ballroom, I think.
That sounds like one of the largest Mile and Point conferences that we've heard about, or at least I've heard about since the pandemic, and probably even, you know, a little bit longer than that.
Yep. So it was at the Hyatt Regency O'Hare. Actually, both Trevor and I know some of the organizers. And, you know, I actually was a speaker there and was able to talk a little bit about premium travel and first class travel, at least in my experiences. And I was able to do a pretty good talk, actually, with our friend Han from Chicago, which we had on the podcast a few episodes ago, as well as another gentleman, Tim, who's very, very knowledgeable. He does a lot of award booking, and he's pretty prolific on Facebook as well. So, and I think one of the moderators on Travel on Points, or no, Travel on, one of the travel, I think Miles Talk, I think. So that was a great experience as well.
Yeah, there's always something nice about being able to get up in front of a bunch of people and talk about something that you love.
Yep. The biggest thing, and I wish you were there for this, was just meeting some of our listeners, you know, because there were just so many listeners there that came up to me and were complimentary about kind of what we do. It was just such great to have affirmation that, you know, the work that we put into recording these, which I'll give a little secret, and I think Trevor knows this too, is this is not that hard because, you know, we just enjoy this thing so much. It still does require a little effort, you know, but it's great to have that affirmation that there are people out there that really enjoy what we do and kind of the work that we put into this.
Yeah. You say it's not a lot of work. There is coordination. There's planning. There's take some coordination to convince many of our friends to come join us and join the conversation and everything. But I agree with you. It really is nice to be able to actually talk to folks, talk to listeners, because in a lot of this case, we're talking to each other, right? We're kind of talking to each other in a vacuum. And so hearing from folks that are listening to these wonderful conversations and getting things out of it is just absolutely wonderful. And I'm really glad that you had the chance to have that experience. I know we had that experience together in San Antonio and also in Minneapolis. I'm sorry that I missed it. I think I was better for it because of some of the stuff going on here back home. One of these days I'll get to a Chicago event. I know that this particular Chicago event had some of the original Chicago Seminars founders involved. And the problem is usually those are in October, and I'm like, I'm very limited on where I want to go for my birthday month.
Well, maybe you'll make it next year, and I sincerely hope. Yeah, hopefully we can both show up in one of these years.
One of these years. I mean, like I said, it sounds like a wonderful, wonderful event, and like you said, the reunion. It's the reunion of all, you know, so many of our friends.
It really is, and yet there was also a lot of new blood. You know, I spoke to a whole bunch of people it was their first time to Chicago Seminars, and they may not have been new to the hobby or the, you know, Miles and Points, but they definitely were new to the event. And, you know, generally everyone had nothing but, you know, really positive things to say. I think it was just a great experience. And there was a lot to learn. Honestly, you know, for us, we've been in this for a while. So, you know, there would be probably a lot of repetition in a lot of the seminars themselves. But, you know, I was still learning a couple of nuggets here and there. And, you know, honestly, the social aspect is just so good. And what's interesting is, you know, we go to these events, but there are very few that are kind of at this scale. You know, used to be back in the day when, you know, actually when Trevor and I first met, you know, some of those frequent traveler universities, you'd have this larger crowd, right? But I think the evolution of these meetups have kind of changed, where this is one of the few events where you're going to have this kind of critical mass of people. And that could be a negative thing. I could see actually for brand new people, this could be very intimidating and daunting. But I think those of you who are in the audience that have been around a while, I think there's also an advantage for you, because having such a huge group of people, like-minded people, people that you know, you may have only met online and never seen in real life. There were a lot of those kind of encounters that I had, which were just so invaluable.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I mean, we met at one of those big frequent traveler university events way back in the day, where you did have multiple tracks and everything. I almost wonder if the reason that we've seen fewer and fewer of those, other than because we were seeing that kind of slow down even before the pandemic, right? The FTU crowd was kind of aligning to the travel and adventure shows. And so you didn't have that like take over a hotel experience. You had like maybe a room or two in a conference room. The problem is those events just take so much energy and so much cash outlay to be able to truly coordinate and to be able to put together. I mean, being friends with many of the organizers, I've been on the sidelines of some of those conversations, and they have been going on for most of the year. So yes, it's a weekend of event, but those folks, and I'm not going to name names because they know who they are, and those that attended know who they are. They've been working on this for an entire year. And I mean, I'm sure that they're taking a couple of weekends off or a couple of weeks off, and then they're probably starting to think about how they can do even better next year. To the same point, as somebody who has done smaller events, I can see why we're seeing more of those smaller events. And I mean, I think there's a place for both from a meetup perspective. The smaller events are a lot easier to put together. And in some cases, you can talk about different topics at those events versus, you know, you can kind of get into some niche events because, or niche topics, because you can focus them much like how we used to do the reselling do. You can focus on a particular aspect of the hobby rather than trying to be put together this multi-track something for everybody sort of thing. And you can at least be a little targeted in how you do it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think two insights that I kind of had from the weekend. One, just as you said, you know, I think the smaller events are the ones where a lot of the information sharing is going to be much more open, much more free, and in some cases, much more valuable. And, you know, I think Trevor and I, you know, the listeners don't know, you know, we live in the DC metro area. And DC metro area definitely punches above its weight in terms of people in the miles and points hobby. And in fact, the people that that attended Chicago seminars from the DC area, we definitely overrepresented. DC does not have the population that was commensurate with its attendance at this event.
Should charter a plane next time.
Yeah, we probably should. I mean, I had like, there were five or six people I knew on my flight. So, you know, so back to DC from the Chicago seminars. And I think we benefit because of that, because we have kind of a wealth of these meetups. I know Trevor does one of these. You know, he does annual Toys for Tots during Christmas time, which is a great local event. And a couple of the metro areas here have strong local groups that meet regularly. But the interesting thing is so much of the rest of the country doesn't have that. You know, not everybody has these strong local groups. I would say it's probably something for your listeners out there, you know, maybe that's an inspiration for some of you to try to put something together. I know Trevor's been involved in this, you know, being the wonderful organizer that he is. I think he's helped that's along quite a bit. I mean, in fact, I belong to a Telegram group because of him. And I think that group has been great just to meet people on a routine basis and interact, which just kind of, you know, helps you with that fix, you know, that, you know, miles and points social fix that you have. But so anyway, that was one big insight, you know, that those who have these local groups, you're super lucky. And the other insight is, I wonder if it's a generational thing too, you know, going back to your original point about how things have evolved with FTU and things like this. You know, I think this Instagram, TikToker generation, they may not just be as interested in spending a couple $100 of their money to go meet people in another city that they don't know. Where I think people of our generation, you know, people in the 30s, 40s or whatever, you know, a little older people, they value this. It's part of what that is. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just being, you know, the typical, you know, older person misunderstanding younger people. But, you know, I vote is pretty strongly. what did you say there, Trevor? I missed that.
I was just being funny. Get off my lawn.
But, you know, I was talking to one of the people there, and he was a first-time Chicago seminars attendee. And he was like, you know, this was not what I expected, TK. And he was like, I was like, in what way? I was like, well, you know, there's all these older people. I think in his mind, you know, maybe he's looking too much at Instagram and TikTok, but maybe he was thinking there'd be a lot of these, you know, 20-something influencers. And there were some influencers, and there were some people who were in their 20s, but I would say they were not the majority. You know, I would say the majority of the people there were people who were a little older, you know, 30s, 40s, you know, 50s, 60s, you know, retirees. We had a lot of those people. And honestly, part of that's probably, you know, these are the people that have the resources and the time to do the travel.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing. Like, I remember all the way back to the first Siderosity do that Matt put together way back down in Charlotte. And I don't think I was surprised about it, but yeah, the demographic was very interesting. I mean, I was definitely among the younger there at the time. And when I think about some of the titans, and I'll say it that way, right? 10, 15 years ago, the titans of the MS crowd were probably older. I mean, you think about Marathon Man or Aloha Dave, I think. They had the bank account set up right next to the post office. They were doing the mint. They were rolling the hand trucks. They had it going. And they probably couldn't have done it if they didn't have that kind of free time of being in that phase of life. Because you think about it, and the game has changed over time, and I don't want to wax philosophically about it too much, but it really is a factor of we're all playing our own game, you know, in this hobby. And that's what I think makes this a beautiful thing, because we can get into those conversations and we can learn. You and I don't even play the game the same way. We both like premium travel, but that doesn't make me right or you right. In fact, it just means that you and I have these really fun conversations where I'm not even thinking. Nowadays, when I'm thinking, if I need a last-ditch effort to get to Europe, I've always got Virgin Atlantic because they always have economy available. Now, you know, I might have to like slap myself silly to convince myself to take Virgin in economy. I've flown it before, by the way, in economy, 3 times, just for the record. But it's different perspectives, and I think that's a beautiful thing. I do want to circle back. You said that Telegram group, and you know, I recommend all the other kind of local areas that you've got a lot of folks. You can do Telegram. You can do other stuff. I know there's a Philly group out there. I don't know if it's on Telegram. I know they do meet up.
I think they meet up in person. Oh, and they probably have some other Facebook or whatever stuff, probably.
I am not going to take credit for that group. It was Avi's brainchild.
Oh, no. But I mean, you participated and you brought in other people, which being the connector that you are, you perform that role.
And I think there's a lot of value in bringing people together.
That's right.
I think we might have hammered this one a little bit too much. I know that there's another event in October. I won't be able to go to that one. I never go to events in October. That's just sort of my thing. And then we will have a Toys for Tots evening meetup. It'll be a happy hour. We usually do it at Barbell in Arlington in like the first week of December, right after Thanksgiving. So you get like any of those Black Friday deals or toys. What we try to do is we try to get some Marines in with Toys for Tots. We try to do a donation, and we usually get a pretty good crowd. I would totally encourage others. The thing that I remember when I first got into this community was the charitable aspect of it. At FTU and stuff, it was always trying to turn some positive aspect for others as well as learning ourselves. And so that's something that we've been embracing, and we continue to do it every year. Started it with Richard and do continue now with Gene and Ed Pizzarella of Pizza in Motion.
And you know, they did raise over $30,000 for charity, mainly through the raffle of the auctions at Chicago Seminar. So not an insignificant amount of money.
No, that's a beautiful thing for the community. It really is. But we do need to start focusing more on trying to get more meetups. I mean, I think there are periods where we just had like this rush of meetups between some of the different Facebook groups and stuff. And then we go into these doldrums, and it's just kind of, you know, it's just kind of interesting. So, you know, maybe we need to think about a listener meetup at some point.
We should do a listener meetup. I think that would be great.
Okay, there we go.
Did we set some expectations? now we have to actually meet.
There we go. But we're not going to set a date to it. But we'll see what we can do.
Listeners, we have some homework.
Well, I mean, you said it wasn't hard to do what we do. So you know.
Well, you know, whenever you're passionate about something, you know, the time goes by quick. The effort is more effortless. I think maybe that's what I was trying to say. I'm not trying to diminish the work that we do. But, you know, it's something that I think we have a true passion for. We just enjoy it. And, you know, as a result, you know, we don't look at it as work. I think we look at it as,
you know, labor of love.
Labor of love. And we're so glad you guys are here with us to enjoy it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we keep on trying new things like we did with Dia. So, you know, hopefully we get some more feedback. But I think that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Mile Anonymous Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story, and preferably not waking you up in the middle of the night
on a carnival cruise ship.
Don't abandon ship.
Yes.